news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8.07. On Mobile Mornings, thank you very much for listening along as we detail you three big things and other such things, big stories in the news locally and around the world. And to join us to talk about some of that is Quinn Hillier.
That's right. It's Tuesday, so we check in with Quinn. Hey, good morning, Quinn.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Hey, we're great, and what a great week this is set to be. Independence Day, America's 250th events going on around the nation. It's a big fireworks set for fireworks show set for this weekend.
Yeah.
Should be a good time, but really great time to think about this country and what it means to you.
Well, definitely. And look, I've actually been disappointed because I wanted this to be as big and as unifying and as joyful as the Bicentennial was. The Bicentennial was literally a seminal event in my life, and there was 15 months of national build-up to it. And and look, I was so overwhelmed by it. I was 12 years old at the time. I literally turned to my father and said, "Dad, I want to live until I'm 112 because I want to see the Tricentennial." This one has not had that same build-up or that same unifying effect or that same love of country, but I hope we can at least start to get that in the next 5 days, even if we won't come close to what it felt like then, but we can start. And there is so much to be proud of relating to being American.
You know, I saw an article you wrote recently. Maybe it's about all that. You take us back to like 1765. The story that you tell is really compelling because it's what I'm not going to say it's an element that we're completely missing now in America. We're not all missing it. We're not all missing the mark. But it does speak. I mean, this was ground. This was ground zero for this nation beginning, and some of the sentiment and the actions taken in that time were pretty remarkable.
Well, they were, because even though you had a semblance of democracy or republics in ancient Greece and Rome, there had never really been an extended empire of liberty anywhere in the world. I think you had some semblance of it in Switzerland, maybe, but this was brand new. The ideals, though, came from the British system, but the Americans, and they were starting to think of themselves as Americans somewhat separately from British at the time, but the ideals of individual rights preceding government, being antecedent to government, not government saying we will grant you these rights, but the rights existing beforehand, that existed nowhere else in the way that it did here. And it didn't just spring from Thomas Jefferson's brain in 1776. It was part of the conversation and part of the understanding of the colonists for years before 1776. And so what I wrote about is I quoted John Adams from 1765, quoted Roger Sherman from 1765. Roger Sherman, by the way, the greatest founder, probably the founder whose greatness and importance is most out of whack compared to how well he is known. He's the only man ever to sign the four founding documents, the Continental Association, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and now I'm forgetting the third one, the Articles of Confederation. And he was part of the five-man committee that wrote the Declaration. Anyway, the point is, for 11 years, they had been writing exactly the kinds of things that ended up in the Declaration of Independence. And Thomas Jefferson said, I didn't make this up, this was, quote, an expression of the American mind, all of these ideas of governments not being there to rule, but being there at because the governed gave their consent to the government in order to secure their rights. Government's whole purpose was to secure the rights of individuals. And that was new. It was brand new. And it was America's great gift to the entire world. I could go on and on, but I'll stop there for now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really amazing when you look at that. Not just the courage that it took for these people to incubate this idea and then follow through with it in 1776 and on the battlefield, but the intellect to even come up with these concepts that really weren't known around the world.
Yeah, and you know, I, like so many others, have probably just been loading up on documentaries and books about America's founding as we head into this 250.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking about how so many of those founding fathers, Quinn, I mean, just their intelligence alone was incredible, but they gained that intelligence. So many of them came from, I guess you could say, elite households or very wealthy households. Not all of them. There were certainly mm-hmm. some that came out of the mud mm-hmm. and helped found this country, but a lot of them were kind of blessed with their station in life. But the difference between so many of the well-off then and the well-off now is it seems like, you know, they had their idea of America and what it could be and freedom and equality for everyone. It seems like the elites now, the ones that are going to the Harvards and Yales, that they're explicitly so often anti-American. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, how much that has adjusted our view of things here.
That's a very important point, and it makes me sick to see how few Americans are proud of being Americans, how many are actually ashamed of our past, even though, you know, what you got to do is not put our values on the past, but see how far in advance of the rest of civilization our actions were at the time. So, say in 1776, we might not like some of the things that they did, but what they did in 1776 was so much better, so much more free, so much more advanced than anything anywhere else, that it was a remarkable stride forward for human liberty, for human rights, for human dignity, all the rest of it. But I'm so glad you said this. Let me tell a story if I've got...
Sure.
What, I have about 4 minutes before the break?
Yeah, we're good.
You mentioned people from every walk of life, including from, say, the landed gentry is what mm-hmm. they were called. And what they did, though, unlike, say, in Vietnam, they risked their lives. And here is a great 4th of July story. You'll see why it's a 4th of July story at the end. We would not be a nation right now, probably, if it were not for a man named James Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
This is a great story. At the end of 1776, there were fewer than 6,000 people under George Washington's command. They were on the run. They were split into three groups. There was one more actually up north that was trying to come down that might have had another 1,000 or 1,500. And there were something like 25,000 British troops for 7,000 very poorly fed, poorly equipped, shoeless Americans in the freezing cold. And all of Washington's troops there, their conscription ended on January 1st.
Hmm.
And they had lost and lost and lost. And the rest of the country was sort of under siege, and the support for the revolution was about to die, and the army was about to die with it because they were all going to leave and nobody else was signing
behind
up.
Them. Yeah.
Yes, and so that's what led to his famous crossing of the Delaware and the Battle of Trenton, because he needed a victory. Without a victory, his army would disappear and he wouldn't get anybody else and the revolution would be over. It was literally that close a thing. He had 7 days left to do something to turn around, to save the entire revolution. And he had sent two columns down the river, one inland and one along the river. And the smaller column was led by his cousin William Washington and by James Monroe, a 19-year-old, maybe even 18, lieutenant. And the Hessians, they were the Germans that the British had hired that were in Trenton. They got awoken, but they were caught by surprise. But meanwhile, the bigger column was coming in from the other side of town. There's only one main street. Imagine like a big bowling alley. And the Hessians rolled a cannon out and aimed it down the street. And because the bigger group of Americans was coming down, it was sort of like coming into a funnel where they were sitting ducks in a little. It was like shooting ducks in a barrel.
Yeah.
Okay. And if that cannon's there, it mows them down. Washington's main group of 1,700 gets mowed down. We lose the Battle of Trenton, and it's all over. But the smaller group led by William Washington and Monroe, seven people, charge the cannon. They take over the cannon that was going to mow down Washington's main army,
mm-hmm.
and turn it against the Hessians, in the course of which James Monroe is shot in the chest and the shoulder. An artery is nicked. He almost bleeds out. An amazing surgeon puts his finger in the artery and keeps Monroe from bleeding out. But if Monroe and Washington and their other five don't take that cannon, we lose the Battle of Trenton. And if we lose the Battle of Trenton, we don't win the war.
Mm.
And instead, because of the word of the Battle of Trenton, thousands of more people come in and volunteer for Washington's army. People from all around the country hear word of it, and they get their hopes up again. It literally saved the entire Revolutionary War, in effect, depended on taking that cannon.
Mm.
And Monroe was one of the seven people that took that cannon, and that saved the war, and that made America.
Man.
And why is this a July 4th story? Well, because everybody knows that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, the two main authors of the Declaration, died 50 years later on July 4th, 1826.
Yep.
But the person that lived, of the founders that, you know, that actually went on to do government work, of the founders that were under arms, actually under arms in 1776, the one that lived the longest was James Monroe.
Wow.
And James Monroe died in 1831, also on July 4th.
Amazing.
James Monroe saved the Revolutionary War by seizing the cannon, and he also died on July 4th. That's a great story. I love telling it.
That's chilling. Just the act of heroism, the level of courage, Dalton. It's just still today we have people doing amazing things that have got to summon that courage.
Yeah, day in and day out.
Yeah, and people like your son and his colleagues in the in the special forces. We owe a debt to so many people.
I was telling Dalton that while I was up in Virginia this past Memorial Day, I actually had a conversation with a gentleman who was right in the middle of the recovery rescues when the plane went down in Iran. I guess was the two pilots that were lost for a time, and he was right with the team that was able to commander, in fact, that was able to make that do the very hard work and get that pilot to safety. Isn't that amazing?
It's absolutely amazing, and there's so many great stories. I mean, you go to Guadalcanal, you go to Iwo Jima, you go to D-Day, on and on and on. Let me go back to Trenton. We were so poorly fed and equipped. Those people that crossed the Delaware and then hiked up 7 miles in the middle of the night at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., in the ice cold and snow, did not have shoes. They left trails of blood from their bloody feet and their frostbitten feet all the way along those 7 miles from where they crossed to the town of Trenton. No shoes in like 20 degree weather, blinding snow.
Amazing.
How do you like that?
Amazing story, Quinn, for sure.
Yeah. And to honor them, we will blast fireworks all throughout the night these next few nights. But I'm feeling the patriotism. I am loving it. And hopefully we'll have some great patriotic shows around the Gulf Coast. We'll get some of those later in the hour, too. And more with Quinn Hilliard when we get back from this break right here on Mobile Mornings.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. SCOTUS handing down some major rulings yesterday and another one on the way today.
Yeah, so I think the biggest of the rulings yesterday, well, there were a couple, and you had them kind of split on presidential powers to relieve those from their jobs, basically carving out the Federal Reserve and saying president can't touch them. Mm-hmm. But for other independent agencies, they gave him the go-ahead to let agency heads and others go. But the other one you had was the mail-in voting. And with Amy Coney Barrett and Chief Justice Roberts joining the three liberal justices, they ended up getting that majority and basically saying the way that mail-in voting is currently being applied with states, that they can continue to do so and that it's up to Congress to write a law determining exactly when ballots need to be in and postmarked by. Now, Alito disagreed with that, but many conservatives upset with Amy Coney Barrett mm-hmm. for writing that majority opinion yesterday, Quinn.
And this is apparently a really close call. I was so busy yesterday, I literally saved that. It's sitting on my desktop mm-hmm. to read the actual opinions today. But going in, I was not on the Amy Coney Barrett side. As Alito and the other three conservatives noted, the long, long history of the understanding of it and the practice of it was votes had to be in by the end of Election Day. It's only in the last 15 or so years that it has been different, maybe 20 years. And they make an originalist argument against letting the votes be counted after Election Day mm-hmm. as long as, you know, Amy Coney Barrett said, and so did four others, that if the votes are cast and postmarked by Election Day, if states want to count them, they can count them. And she had an originalist argument based on her interpretation of the laws as written. And it's a close call. People on both sides saying, oh, this is obvious, I think mm-hmm. are wrong. I happen to think the conservatives here were right and Barrett and the liberals were wrong. But the key thing is, at least both sides are now literally going back to the history and the original text rather than just saying this is what we think should be the best policy or not. Mm-hmm. They're actually going to the text, and that is a big conservative advance from, say, 45 years ago before Scalia and Thomas got there.
And then today, it is expected that they'll release, I guess here in about 30 minutes, some more opinions as they wrap up their term. And the birthright citizenship question is the main one people are waiting for, and how these justices read that 14th Amendment. Do they save these? I mean, it seems obvious. They save some of the biggest cases usually for the final days, I'm sure, because arguments are so intensive and there's so much writing on it, but it doesn't hurt that they can kind of get out of Dodge after dropping that opinion, right?
Well, that's true. Now, most of the decisions are just released when they actually have all the opinions and cross opinions in, and so when cases that are actually heard before the court in October tend to be released in January or February, and those that are heard in January are released in April, etc. Mm-hmm. So some of the bigger cases just happen to have been argued later in the term, which means it's sort of natural that they don't get decided till the end of the term. But you're right. If there is a bigger or a more controversial case that is argued anywhere near the latter half of the term, they will hold it to the last day or two rather than, say, a week or two before, for just that reason. They want to get it out of there and then get out of Dodge.
Off to Martha's Vineyard.
Yes, Quinn, you got to get out of here. Let people know where they can read your stuff.
QuinnHillier.com or Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA.com. Those are the two easiest ways.
Thanks. Great week. Great work this week. You've got a list of some of the yeah, Independence Day, and before that, going
lay out the full schedule for you here on the way for Independence Day celebrations around the coast.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
On the text line, 251-343-0106. A lot of people really like Quinn's story from the American Revolution. Randy says filmmaker Ken Burns has stated that he considers the American Revolution the most important event in world history since the birth of Jesus Christ.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. And that, man, those Ken Burns documentaries, they're great. I know that some people, they don't like some of his liberal leanings, but if you haven't been able to check out that American Revolution documentary, it is well worth your time.
Yep.
Troy Fan said, fantastic story from Quinn.
Yep.
Chris from Orange Beach, you know, you've been mentioning this morning at Social Media Day, mm-hmm. and Chris said, I'm 62 years old and have never been on Facebook or any other form of social media. At this point in my life, I can't see why I would ever want to. No, I think you're good, Chris. I don't think there is any need. If you've made it this far,
yeah.
I think you're probably doing all right.
I don't do a lot of social media until then you consider, like, 70% of Americans have been on Facebook, I think I saw. Maybe a slightly lesser percentage watch YouTube. I watch YouTube a lot because it's kind of on demand. It's on my big screen. It's on yeah. my TV. So I watch it a lot because I'm just like watching things on demand, basically.
Yeah. A lot of Herschel Walker films you're watching there.
There goes Herschel.
There goes Herschel. Also, Rebecca said, we are going to American Village in Montevallo for the 4th. Look at Sweet Home 250 website. They're having a great 4th celebration with many Alabama celebrities. I think I made my way to Montevallo maybe 2 or 3 times through elementary and junior high, taking the field trip there. That's really cool.
You haven't been to D.C.?
I haven't been to D.C., no. Somehow I missed that.
How far are they apart?
Montevallo? Well, it's in Alabama.
Oh, the Montevallo here?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, Rebecca might be. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought she was maybe talking about going to Montevallo here. But all the same, Rebecca, there's so many great events. We'll get to some of them that are coming up around the Gulf Coast here these next few days, too. But, yeah, I've got to make the trip to D.C. This would have been the week to do it, right?
This would have been the week where you would certainly have been in a crowded airport if you're going up there. But, yeah, this would be a great week to do that.
Okay.
You're right.
Yeah, Rebecca says she is. It's the Alabama Montevallo.
Oh, she is.
She's
okay.
going to.
Okay.
C.B. Carl says, the culture of sacrifice for a greater goal is what inspired me to put John 15:13 in my Independence Day message on the tailgate of my truck. Yeah, great story of sacrifice there from Quinn. And then even more recently from Dan. You can see it's still going on 250 years later, men and women putting their lives on the line.
Yeah, it's such an honor to have those people in my life. You know, it's really, I'm humbled by it.
I was going to say, it's got to be so humbling.
It is very
too.
Humbling.
Enlivening. I don't know. It makes you feel some kind of juice too, saying, hey, man, if they can be that passionate about this country, I can too.
Yeah, they are remarkable, and all of you who have served, God bless you, and thank you for having the courage to do so.
Michael, bringing us back down to earth a little bit, talking about what Congress is actually doing in D.C. right now, which usually the answer to that is not much. But he said, if y'all talked about the Kids Act that passed the House yesterday, it's an age verification process for the internet that can basically be used to track all internet activity because everyone has to submit their age verification by some kind of ID. It's a big tech and big brother dream for the ability to be weaponized for censorship. And, you know, of course, there's been so much talk about internet safety and the kids. It only made sense that Congress would eventually try to tackle it in their own special way, which usually involves a lot of lobbying, right, from the outside. And then what you generally
see
is...
You got to grease the wheels.
And what you generally see is the sector that they're trying to go in and regulate. Well, so often those sectors like tech here are big enough to buy them off so mm-hmm. that... really who ends up being harmed are the little people, just your regular run-of-the-day citizens. And it seems that that's kind of the way that the House went with this act, Kids Internet and Digital Safety
Act.
What
exactly does it say?
Well, so they lessened some of the actual regulatory mechanisms by how tough they would actually be on the providers like Meta and and X, yeah. and so many of these different sites. A lot of the pornography sites are mentioned in this act as well. But so they it appears, kind of lessened how strong they would be on those tech platforms. But it does look, and I'm trying to get to the exact part here in the bill, like ID verification will be part of this, and they're saying it's to ensure that, you know, they're dealing with of age children, like, so that they don't have to with the kids in this act. They're trying to make it so that chatbots can only talk to them in certain ways, that they can only access certain parts of these apps,
yeah.
and that basically, I don't know if the age is 13 or 16, but if you're under that age, you're going to be severely limited in what you can and can't do,
right.
on the internet. Well, how widespread will that ID verification be? Like, if Chris from Orange Beach decides he all of a sudden does want to join Facebook, is Chris going to have to take pictures of his Alabama ID and say, look, I'm plenty old enough to be on this site?
Maybe he will.
But obviously the real issue with that privacy that people have with it is the privacy
issue.
And that they'd be able to use that to really, you know, handcuff online anonymous speech, which we talk about the founders and their control of the printing press early on helped move America in the direction we ended up going. But they were, for the most part, using anonymous names. You know, they were using mm-hmm. pen names and saying things that they may not have been able to say using their real names and continue to do their jobs in public. They would have caught so much flack from that, or from the Brits would have come after them. So
yeah, well,
it's kind of funny that they're stifling that, or trying to stifle that, when that is a big part of the founding of America.
Yep, you're right. And it's a big talking point right now, if you can even say it, in places like England, where thought police are rounding people up. It's unbelievable.
Putting people in jail for
some of the arrests that you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And Starmer himself, who's just about out now, right?
Yeah.
But they talk in this way that they believe righteously in those sort of actions. It's like, whoa, that's about as far from American values as you could be.
Yeah, putting people in jail for what they're saying online.
Yeah, yeah.
And the drawback of that, of course, is that everyone's online. Yeah. So, like, for instance, I was watching and reading about Chris Johnson, the running back who was diagnosed with ALS, made that announcement yesterday. And there were so many trolls under a lot of those posts just saying the most obscene and vulgar things, you know, just trying to get a rise out of people. And on Twitter, you can at least look at their countries of origin or where their profiles were made.
Yeah.
And none of them are from America. I mean, I know we have our American trolls.
What are they saying? I mean,
just, you know, making
suffering from ALS.
Yeah, I mean, they're making just crude jokes.
Oh, okay.
and not even funny jokes. It's sometimes bots, but that's kind of where the whole, you know, the fact that everyone is able to get online and you can hear what they have to say about it. Sometimes you're just talking to somebody from, you know, Pakistan who doesn't really care.
At least on our text line, there are things that I decide not to talk about on the air, because I'm really not sure how it will be interpreted, and just kind of keep it like, well, that's just a personal item. I'll just keep that away from the microphone. And part of it is really how people will react to it. We kind of know who these texters are, or most of them, we know who they are. Basically, mm-hmm. they're members of our audience. It's not somebody from China or Europe just messing with us. But there's times when you you don't get all the information out of us. We try to do the best we can with you, but there's certainly things that I leave unsaid.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so here's the age ID stuff. Sorry, I was looking it up right here. So in this Kids Act, for adult content sites, it requires age verification. For ordinary online platforms, the bill says it does not require age gates. So that's pretty much what a lot of the states have already been doing with the pornography websites and some of the gambling websites. For those, you have to have your ID. Actually, pretty much all of the gambling websites.
Yeah.
For those, they ask you to give your ID, but it looks like for now, a lot of the social media,
you're fine,
you
right?
won't need it. Hey. So the rest of the week, we've got plenty of events coming up.
I
won't get to all of them now, because we have a few more days with you this week, but we do have a couple of 4th of July events on the coast beginning Thursday, actually. You got the Red, White, and Run 5K on Fort Morgan. It's open to all ages and fitness levels. That'll be Thursday morning at 7 a.m. They get going for that. Everyone wearing their red, white, and blue. And registration, $35 for adults, $25 for children 12 and under. Actually, we're in the late registration stage, so it's about $5 more than that. That'll be hosted by the Fort Morgan VFD Ladies Auxiliary. Saraland's going to get their fireworks show going a little early this week.
The 2nd of July.
Yeah, that'll be Thursday night for Saraland. The party starts at 6:30. It'll be at Saraland High School. Fireworks at 9 Thursday night. It'll be Stars, Stripes, and Saraland. They salute to 250 years, food trucks, family fun, patriotic pride, and a fireworks show at 9 p.m. The Wharf has their Independence Day street party on Thursday, and that'll run from 5 to 9 p.m. for the kids, then fireworks and a drone show after that, and the hangout celebrating pretty much Thursday through the weekend.
Special guests from Alta Point talking about veterans' issues. They're straight ahead.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5-850. I've just learned that our guest, Mary Lee's last name is Lee. It's Mary Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And got that right, Mary?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And great to have Mary Lee in with us this morning, a psychiatric care nurse practitioner with Alta Point Health. And we're talking about, well, just that, your specialty, mm-hmm. and specifically dealing with veterans and those who come home and a lot of the issues that they deal with. Thanks for coming in with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Mary Lee, you're also, you've served in the military? Or
yes, sir.
Okay.
Still serving, and I've been in, it'll be 19 years in August.
Wow.
So.
Oh, wow. And so you're at Alta Point Health, and love talking with you guys and the great service that you provide. Why is it important to view, you know, physical health and mental health as connected, especially for veterans? And you think of veterans, especially when they're coming right out of service, they're usually the fittest people around.
Right.
But that's physically, not always mentally. But how are they
right.
connected?
So it's really important to have them both connected because they are so intertwined. A lot of the physical can cause mental issues. Mental can cause physical. For example, chronic pain, you know, that can lead to depression, anxiety, and just not leading a very healthy lifestyle. So it's really important to look at the whole person. Also, when you come off of active duty, these military members are used to having everything right there, mm-hmm. on an Army post or Air Force or whatnot. So they're used to having those services all together. And so it's kind of a shock when you get out to the community and you have to figure out who to go to for what.
Mm.
So it's really important to keep that integrated.
It's almost like everything's a shock. Like
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
They come out of the military, regardless of the service and how they served, and especially if they have been in battles and such.
Right.
It's just a complete these people who were put together so well. Suddenly, the world's a big puzzle, and they just need our help. And it's that's why you're there. I know. And to tell us about your military background a little bit, if you would.
Okay. So I joined in 2007, and I went the long way around my military career. I already had a degree, so I should have gone in as an officer, but I wanted to go have fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined as a public affairs specialist doing photojournalism.
Okay.
And so I did that for 6 years, deployed to Iraq. And, I knew I eventually wanted to be an officer, but only if I was a nurse, because that's what really interested me. So once I got back from Iraq, after a year there, I went into nursing school, got my degree, and commissioned through ROTC. So I was actually a sergeant, eligible for staff sergeant, and became a cadet, which was quite a humbling experience to be, you know, an experienced combat vet and then go hang out with college kids learning to be soldiers. So I would say that was the most humbling part of my career.
I would say so, yeah. You can be called a lot of things. You can't be called lazy.
Right, yeah. So it was a hard way to do it. Got through school and then became a psychiatric nurse practitioner. Wow. And so I've been an Army nurse now since 2012.
Hmm. And I'm sure that really helps you connect, too, with a lot of your patients, just having that similar background.
Mm-hmm. Having the background, and now this is what I do for a living. So they feel a little bit more comfortable talking with me because mm-hmm. I've been to, you know, we can talk about a lot of the places we've been together and seen some of the same things.
Yeah. That's probably comforting to the one that you're talking with.
Oh, yes, sir.
To have that conversation.
And, you know, and so many of our listeners, veterans, and a lot of the ones I've talked to, they tell me about the physical challenges now decades mm-hmm. after their service. Usually it involves some knee replacements and things like that. But what are some of the unique healthcare challenges that you see veterans face after their service?
Well, now one of the biggest challenges is the PTSD. So in a lot of the former wars, you're seeing a lot of more deaths, you know, the world wars, you're seeing high numbers of mortality, but now we're not seeing that as much. But with that comes their survival. They're surviving things like traumatic brain injuries. They're surviving PTSD and just all the things that they've seen, and then trying to come back and reintegrate into life where, you know, they may have been deployed for a year. Life has gone on without them. Spouses learn a new way to do things, and so you're trying to come back and reintegrate. And what was socially acceptable in the Middle East for your daily life is no longer mm-hmm. socially acceptable when you come home. So it's a big switch.
Amazing they can integrate back nearly at all. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's
such a different world.
Yes, it is. Completely different.
Completely
world.
Different.
They need the care that you're giving them. They need what you're trying to provide, right?
Right. And just kind of a safe place to land.
Yeah.
Of, you know, because a lot of people can't understand what they're going through. And it's very hard to turn off that switch of, mm-hmm. especially a reservist being a citizen soldier. You go mm-hmm. over there and this is your job and this is what you do. And then you might be a airplane mechanic in the Army, but then you come home and you're a police officer. Mm-hmm. So that's something completely different.
Yeah. And you talked to, and we're talking with Mary Lee with Alta Point Health. You talked about how physical health and mental health are so intertwined. And I can see that for sure. Like if you're really in poor physical shape, say you suffered a gruesome injury and you're trying to work your way back, or just you got way more overweight than you need to be, mm-hmm. you can see how that affects your mental health. But
absolutely.
How does it work the other way? If say you come back and you're in good physical condition, but mentally you're just really going through it, how does that affect your mental, your physical health?
I think because when you're overseas and you're fit and you're ready to fight, you're kind of always in that fight or flight mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can kind of put on the back burner what you're feeling mentally. You basically just dump it at the end of the day because you've got another mission the next day.
Mm-hmm.
When you come home, you can't do that. And so you're left with, you don't have that, you know, we call it esprit de corps, you know, mm-hmm. the community with your unit or your platoon or whoever you're with that you are in charge of keeping them alive, and they're keeping you alive. So now you're back in this different reality where it's a much lower tempo of life, but it becomes very uncomfortable.
Confusing
and uncomfortable because you're not constantly distracted by things going on. Mm-hmm. And that's when things creep in, you know, you don't have that purpose that you had before,
mm-hmm.
That responsibility and that duty. And now you're just trying to figure out, well, I was working out before because I had to stay fit to fight.
Right.
Well, now I'm just working out before it, you know, Planet Fitness or whatnot to stay healthy. And it's a harder driving force.
Yeah. The dang lunk alarm at Planet Fitness.
Right.
I'm sure
right. It definitely like affects the psyche because the drive to stay fit is no longer there.
Oh, and while we have you in here too, talk about the benefits of receiving primary care and behavioral health care and doing that in a setting that is, you know, integrated, coordinated, and not just trying to find Band-Aids online somewhere.
Right. Well, and so let's be honest, if we think about it, if we're looking for a doctor or a primary care physician, you're a lot more likely to do that at a place that can also handle your mental health needs rather than Googling or trying to look for a place for mental health and hoping they have can also treat the physical. Because there is still that stigma there.
Mm-hmm.
There will always be some degree of that where, you know, the military, yes, feelings are important. Yes, your mental health is important. But at the end of the day, you still have a mission to accomplish.
Yep.
So the process there is to always prioritize the physical health and not look for mental health services. So if you can find a place that does your physical health and takes care of just those basic needs, you know, your sleep is taken care of, you're feeling physically well, then you can kind of relax a little bit and take care of, okay, now what's actually going on? You build a rapport with your providers. You realize there are other resources. You're not going to have to go into some building that's marked just psychiatry.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more, you're there for a whole health
assessment
picture. Yeah. So it's
Thank you, Mary Lee, so much for coming
thank
in.
You.
If you want to call Alta Point, 251-450-2211, 251-450-2211. If this segment landed with you or someone you know, certainly reach out and we'll have this podcast listed on our Facebook page. Thank you, Mary Lee.